This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 490, brought to you by Geek Nation Tours and iFanboy listeners just like you. Memories like the corners of my mind, misty watercolored memories of the way we were, scattered iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 490. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and sitting in for my co-host Josh Flanagan is Panel.net's Paul Montgomery.
Hey, everybody.
iFanboy former writer, iFanboy former editor, former iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast co-host.
Thanks for keeping the seat warm for me.
You wear many hats, Paul.
I do. And when you asked if I could be on the show, I was like, I have to, because the last time I was asked, it was Josh, and then I was really busy that week, and then he ended up doing the show by himself, and I felt so bad.
Yeah, he had a little bit of a panic attack that week when everyone was too busy to do it.
I was like, I really wanted to. I was like, next time, definitely, please ask me soon, but it was just, that was a bad week, and so I'm happy to be here.
You've redeemed yourself.
I hope so.
And we are iFanboy. We like comics. If we could read a bunch of comics, one of us picks their favorite comic of the week. We call that the pick of the week. We talk about that book, other books of the week, fun stuff, do some listener mail. Really, we just try to have a good time, Paul. That's all we try to do. It's our mandate.
I like that. That's a good mandate for a show.
And here's your spoiler warning. This is a review show. There'll be some spoilers. So there you go. Exercise some caution. If you haven't read the books, pause the show. This week, I had to pick.
Okay.
I read a lot of books this week. There was a whole bunch of DC number ones, which we'll talk about in a minute. And a lot of fun stuff. But ultimately, Southern Bastards number 9 was the clear pick, because this is the closest I think I'm going to feel to having scalped back. And I mean, the story's great. The characters are really interesting. But this, the storytelling that he's doing here, in which he has taken a background-ish character and now dived deep into them, is something he did a lot on Scalped. And then it really ends up fleshing out the entire world over the course of however long the series is going to go. And this issue, we learn all about the sheriff of the town. I should put the town, his name I forget. But we've seen him a bit, it being sort of ineffective.
Bastardton.
Bastard town. He ineffectively being the sheriff of the town. Really, the town's run by Coach Boss. And in this issue, we dive into his story as a former player of Coach Boss's. And really, everything we might have felt positively about Coach Boss has just ripped us under again in this issue.
Yeah, it was also fun reading the letters column on this one, because there are people like being like, I know what you're trying to do, and I don't feel any sympathy for this guy. I don't care. And then like this issue for sure. Yeah, you don't feel any sympathy. But I had that same Scalped vibe where like, OK, this is like the third arc, basically, and or the third storyline. And we're 9 issues deep and like, OK, I can kind of see what they're doing here. This is cool. Like it has a very different feel from Scalped.
Right.
But I think as a format, as a template to follow, I think it's a really interesting way to tell a story about an ensemble, a wider ensemble. And now you get this character who was a background player in, you know, the first issue, and now you finally get to see his life story play out.
This reminds me a lot of, and this is not, I guess we'll see more, right?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, yeah.
It's not a one-shot about the sheriff.
It's at least a two-parter.
Yeah, so this reminds me a lot of, like, you know, we'd go and find out about Shunka or somebody over there. I even thought a bit of Preacher, which would do that, which is probably the highest amount of praise I could give something, is that would occasionally break away from the narrative. And it's not breaking away. This is just a different way of it. It's more of a spider web format. You know, it's like, it's not a straight line story. It's, we're going to go in different directions, always moving forward, but sometimes follow this guy, sometimes follow this one. And I thought this was great.
Yeah, and well, like in the first arc, you had Earl, and like you thought he was going to be the nucleus of the story, and then it ends up being Coach Boss is actually the nucleus, and then now we're just following one of the mitochondria, basically. So we're venturing out a little bit, but still integral characters within this whole thing. And Coach Boss is a dick.
Well, I mean, there's a bit of the old sympathy here, because the last issue ended with his trusty assistant coach committing suicide once he realized just how awful Coach Boss was and how much he contributed to that by helping him over the years as his assistant coach.
And so he's like, you're telling me he beat him in the street and everybody watched and nobody did anything? And he's like, yep, that's basically what happened. It's like, okay, I'm going to shoot myself in the head.
So he shoots himself, and Coach Boss loves this guy and is very angry and wants the murderer found, even though clearly there was no murderer, but ends up getting blamed on their county rivals, of course, because it had to be about football. And this is the sheriff's futile attempt to keep a lid on the simmering tensions between the football teams, and also flashing back to him as the star running back. This sort of harkens back a little bit to the original story of Friday Night Lights, not the TV series, in which the star running back was like going to go, you know, places and ended up getting hurt and never going anywhere.
Yeah.
He doesn't get hurt here so much as the coach orders his players to beat him with bats about his legs so that he can never go to college and become a star, because Coach never got to go to college and become a star.
Well, they almost tease that. They almost tease that with Smash on the TV show where he got injured a bit and, you know, everything was going terribly wrong, but then it, you know, comes back around, thankfully.
But this is just tragic. Yeah. You can see it coming a mile away, because obviously he didn't leave and become a big star. But even though you see it coming, it's sort of that tragic train that's on the tracks and you can't stop it. It's like, no.
And then running into women that he had relationships with when, you know, he was a teenager. And like, that would be the reality of being like a townie, basically, in this small town where, you know, everybody knows everybody, and, you know, and nobody gets out of that town. Still, you're like, he must have, like, Coach Boss must have something else even beyond that over him, because to stay and be under his thumb all that time after he did that to you, after he sent two of your buddies after you with baseball bats.
Well, he's in a position of nominal power and nominal respect in the town, right?
I guess so, yeah.
Although he would basically be doing nothing. You know, like a lot of the people in this book, we just see sort of existing and not really living, and his reward, the coach says after he beats him, is his reward's going to be, you know, he's going to be the sheriff.
And it's like a redneck Game of Thrones.
Kind of is.
Like, I'm going to do something really despicable to you, and now I guess that's true. Like, no matter where he would go, he wouldn't be in as high of a status as he is with this position he's been given by the coach.
Yeah. And then the big reveal at the end is that he has a wife and two kids, despite his pursuing his ex-girlfriend from high school in the middle of the issue. So there's a lot going on here with this sheriff, who's now a very interesting character. We didn't know much.
Yeah, and leading up to that, he's like, I have nothing. There's like nothing for me here. I've given up. There, it's just this job that I have, and that future that I, you know, that I once had, that ghost of a past and everything, and then coming in and, hey, daddy, and like, they clearly, like, at least his son, his older son, you know, has affection for him. It's not like I have nothing, like, and you go in and then they're like, they want nothing to do, you know, with the old man. Like, it's like at least one of his family, you know, really cares about him deeply and looks up to him. And so that's interesting.
And the son's carrying on the family tradition of sweet flat tops.
Yep.
Now, one thing I do love about Jason Latour's art is that everyone's face has sadness in it. You know, like, yeah. Look at the wife's mm-hmm. face in the last page, the high school ex-girlfriend's face in the bank. She's the bank employee. And I mean, the sheriff's always sad. Everyone in this town's a little sad. And I know that's part of their sort of commentary on, you know, being stuck in the small town. But it just really works. It makes this book really emotional because there's nobody that's happy here. Even Coach Boss, who runs the town with an iron fist, is not a happy man. And it's just really, really, really interesting.
I love the detail of him wearing shorts all the time. Like, and he has like the scrawniest legs ever. And it's like, he doesn't look like that threatening of a person. It's just, he looks like a really hardened person, but it's, you know, it's his actions and his weird reactions to things. Like, of course it's the rival, you know, right. town.
Well, it is homecoming and weekend, Paul.
Clearly, it's homecoming murder, weekend. Of course.
Any murder can be attributed to your,
like, it's almost comical in that scene where he's like, and you know what this is, right? And the guy's clearly like, well it's suicide. A suicide. Obviously, he has a suicide note, like everything. Like, I told him something really depressing, and he goes and blows his brains out. And he's like, it's that rival team. They came in here.
Oh, Coach Boss.
There's great storytelling throughout here, too. Like, the stuff where he's, you know, he's the sheriff's out, and he's out of his vehicle, and he left his belt with his gun and all his stuff behind on the front seat, and he's surrounded by these kids. And this is after we saw the moment where his own teammates beat him up. So what are these kids going to be able to do to, you know, him as an older guy and without any of his stuff? And I was like, this is going to escalate. And, you know, and it went a different way, but that tension there of just cutting away to the front seat and all of the stuff that he could use to get out of this scrape there.
Well, he took out some pain, some of his own psychic pain on these kids. He's like, yeah. I'm going to whoop some linebacker's ass. And he did. And he did the thing he couldn't do when he was a kid, which is beat on these angry football players. And I just think this book is just so wonderful.
It's really, I mean, top to bottom, really, really strong.
This might have been my favorite issue of the series. I'm not sure. I just think this is such a great character piece. And it showed how quickly you can make someone very interesting and sympathetic, just a few pages.
I just remember, like, first hearing about this series, and something in the writing of the synopsis made it sound like there were vampires or werewolves in this. And I kept waiting in that first arc for like werewolves to show up, like some occult element, and it hasn't. But it's definitely scarier than any of that.
You got the Walking Dead UFO pitch in your head.
Yeah, I do. I guess
this is a big week for Southern Bastards. In addition to the highly prestigious Pick of the Week honors, it was picked up by FX and Scott Rudin's company for development of the TV series. So congratulations to Jason Aaron and Latour for closing that deal.
That's a great pick for FX too.
Yes, fits in.
Justified going away. It's a perfect fit.
Fills that Justified hole plus a little bit of Friday Night Lights in it.
Breaking Bad was originally going to be on FX. That's what they were, you know, setting it up for, and then they moved over to AMC. So like, it's a good home for it.
Now this was a big week for DC. A lot of DC number ones came out, so we're going to go through a bunch of them. Not all of them, I don't think. Right?
No.
Yeah, but a bunch. When Marvel launches post Battle World, we'll do that for all those Marvel number ones. Not all of them, but you know, we'll do a whole bunch of those too when we can return to reading Marvel.
Yeah, I had this weird idea I was going to read all of Convergence, and then I read like week one and a half of Convergence. Like, no. Yeah, so I'm just reading what I'm interested in. I'm just whatever looks kind of, you know, intriguing.
So this week we had a bunch. We'll start with Black Canary number one. This is the spin-off book from Batgirl.
Right.
Featuring the same writing team, correct?
So it's Brendan Fletcher and Annie Wu on art.
I loved the Annie Wu art in this issue.
Yeah, really strong.
What did you think of it overall?
I really liked this. And the thing that occurred to me halfway through was like, why has no one done this with Black Canary yet? You know, like given her power set and everything. I don't know if they've toyed with, you know, like doing the rock star thing. But like, right. This is just such a natural fit for the character and for the look of the character. And
you're right.
I'm really into this. I think a lot of these number ones are a little odd because they started with these, I don't know, online prequel things. Which I didn't read any of. Yeah. So some of them are like, okay, sure. And so I don't know, you know, entirely like all about these characters, but it's a good cast and she's really interesting. And when the fight breaks out, the art is just tremendous.
Yeah.
It's like these these weird creatures that look like doodles, like ink doodles, yeah. like that just like come out of the crowd. And I was like, this is such a, it's, I mean, like they want a punk rock vibe for it. And sometimes when you do a comic, and especially like a mainstream superhero comic, it's super lame.
Right.
But this like just felt really natural. And like, yeah, it's these are punk rock bad guys. And, you know, this is a punk rock, you know, character, and it works.
I did like the running joke that wherever they played, they were attacked. And so there was a giant brawl on the stage. So she got this reputation, not so much as a musician, but as someone who cut in a lot of fights.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because this week was, for these books, for a lot of these books, it was all about my brain trying, just going, okay, these are just, these are all new interpretations. I've got to roll with it.
Basically, yeah.
Which is not bad necessarily. It's just there's a lot of sort of heavy reinterpretation going on with some of these characters.
Yeah, one of my friends was like, so does Dinah have any history with Oliver in the New 52? And I was like, I don't even know if that matters anymore. Like, I don't, like,
well, the New 52 stuff. They mentioned her having been married, and that could have been a reference to it, but
yeah,
it all like, doesn't make any sense. That you almost have to treat each book as an individual bubble, unless they're implicitly linked like this one in Batgirl. Because it just doesn't make any sense if you think about it for more than 2 minutes.
So, like, I don't even know if, like, does it have more of a link to New 52 stuff or pre-52 stuff at this point? I don't even know, and I don't, like, I kind of don't mind. I'm kind of trying to go with the iFanboy philosophy of just, you know, just roll with it, and it'll make sense in time.
It's tough. It's tough to do, but...
Yeah, but, like, I just love the tone and vibe of this, and the Annie Wu art is just stellar. So I'm on board for this one. I think this is my favorite of these so far.
So you're sticking with this one?
I'm sticking with this one, yeah.
Justice League of America number one. This is the book written and drawn by Brian Hitch, who was a giant superstar in the 15 years ago in the early part of the 2000s.
Mm-hmm. Widescreen comics.
Widescreen comics with Warren Ellis. And this was like it felt like this book was like four times as big as a regular book. I know there was a lot of rumblings that it was expensive. It was like $5.99 or $4.99 or something, but it was like at least double size. It might have been more than double size. So this is the speaking of continuity, this is the explicitly out of continuity book.
Oh, okay. This is the one I did not read. I read the rest of these, but you have to fill me in on this.
Out of continuity is not accurate. It's the we're not worried about continuity book. I mean, it's set in the New 52, the New 52 versions of the characters, but they're just going to tell Justice League stories and not worry about him fitting in. Like, you know, here you've got Superman fully powered with his quote-unquote costume, but not the, you know, depowered t-shirt version that we're seeing in his books, you know? So they're not really worried about matching up to what's going on. They're just telling stories, which is normally kind of how Justice League books were, just because it's almost possible to keep up what's going on in everybody's stories. But this is explicitly stated... We're just going to tell stories here and not worry about it. And actually, I thought this was kind of fun. I mean, it's...
Who's on the roster?
It's the standard team from the...
The standard team? Okay.
It's Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, Flash, Aquaman, Cyborg. So
okay.
I would have kind of liked, not necessarily a different team, but maybe an expanded roster. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe add in a couple of people, add in Martian Manhunter, who we're going to talk about next.
Like Unlimited style?
I don't need a giant team, but like maybe, you know... I feel like there's a couple of pieces we could add.
Well, Unlimited, it wasn't necessarily like a giant team. It was just like you had this rolling roster.
I think for me what I mean is the lineup's been the same for 3 years.
Right.
And maybe it's time to roll some people in that are new. Some different dynamics.
Like not just go with the Super Friends kind of.
Right. Thing. And I like the Super Friends, but you can always jump, you know, add a different dynamic by adding a couple of new characters. Anyway, the Hitch art was... stronger than I've seen in a while, although still wonky in places.
Mm-hmm.
It seems strange to say you're always worried about an artist who's also going to write when artists have always written, but I've never read anything Brian Hitch had written before, so I didn't know what to expect. And it was pretty fun. I mean, it wasn't in the continuity of writers and artists who do the same thing. I would put him in the middle.
Okay. You
know? I wouldn't put him in sort of the Flash territory that where it kind of became sort of plotting.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't put him in the Darwin Cook category either. I'd put him, you know, solid writer. And this is sort of a fun Justice League story. There's a giant parasite fight in the middle, which he sucks on some people and gets gigantic. And it's a big action book.
Is that the vibe? Is it, like, fun or is it, like, cool? if I was to think of like a Hitch book, like it would just be kind of like, I don't know, edgy.
It's not edgy. It's not like standing around posing.
Okay.
It was sort of a fun Justice League story. I don't know where it's going yet, even though there was a lot of pages. There was 58 pages. But
it's interesting.
He's got the dynamics down pretty
well. Are they all going to be 58 pages?
I don't know. I can't imagine. First of all, like, how long did it take him to draw these 58 pages? Well, of course, yeah. That counts the covers. But I'm really curious to see how often he actually draws this book. So, but this, I just thought this was a fun sort of don't worry about continuity, just have a good time, Justice League story. And I don't know the overall plot yet. It ends, the cliffhanger ends with the appearance of Great Rao, the Kryptonian god that Superman has been to invoke.
Hmm.
And he says, I am the great god Rao, and I've come to save you. And that's the cliffhanger. So I'm not quite sure what the story is, but it was fun as a Justice
League story. Like the Mangog arc of JSA?
Maybe. I think I just liked that it didn't feel oppressive. Like I was worried about a lot of things. I just was watching the Justice League have a good time. So cool. It would be worth checking out if you're a fan of the Justice League, I think.
Let's talk about some really weird shit. Martian Manhunter number one. Martian Manhunter is a weird character.
He's one of my favorite characters.
He's a very interesting character. I was into this in the beginning because it was so weird.
Yeah.
I like the Mr. Biscuit kind of character. It was like, what's going on here? Like this urban legend boogeyman kind of thing. But then I kind of lost the thread with this.
Yeah, I felt the same way. It's funny. Well, first of all, I thought the Eddie Barrows art was wonderful.
Yeah, that's cool.
I'm a big Eddie Barrows fan.
Very effectively creepy in that opening scene.
The Dan Panosian cover is pretty great too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For me, one of the saddest things about the New 52 is that the Martian Manhunter character has been completely sort of destroyed. And I mean, like, just sort of, he was this great sort of moral center of the universe, and he was turned into this weird, angry alien, which was, like, completely counter to who he's supposed to be, and then sort of shunted to the side. And
he was, like, they shuffled around, like, he played musical teams for a while.
They would just sort of stick him on every team. He was in Stormwatch.
And
here, in this issue, he calls himself a member of the Justice League, even though I guess he's talking about that Justice League United team or whatever it was, but...
Mm.
Let me ask you a question, Paul. He's a shapeshifter.
Yes.
But you got to believe that mass has to stay the same size, right? Like he couldn't shapeshift into like a fly, right? And just sort of and get really small.
He could turn into like a bunch of flies, I guess, but like to turn into like a giant dragon that and be perched on top of
bigger than a jetliner. I was like, "How does I what?"
Yeah, I don't know, unless that was hollow. Like,
I mean, I guess
he's like really stretched out and like.
I guess he can stretch like Mr. Fantastic and shapeshift.
Maybe it was. I mean, it's a spooky image, and it was just like a really strong moment. But I was taken out of it. I was like, can he do that?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on here, other than this seemed to be implying that everything we know about John Jones is wrong, and he's actually been sort of a bad guy, sent to Earth as a bad guy.
Yeah, I mean, I think every character that's like an alien that wakes up on Earth, like they go through that storyline at some point. Like they did it on Smallville, I think. Like the idea that maybe you were sent there to conquer instead of, you know, or like the usual origin is just ends up there by accident because the scientist, right? I'm thinking of a new friend.
No, that's how the original one was. It was a
brought just to Earth. Shows up. He against his own will, he ends
he
up
was
there.
Was zapped to Earth, and his appearance was so shocking that the guy zapped him had a heart attack and died.
And I guess it's like there's sleeper agents on Earth that are different Martians, and they're being activated. I don't know, I thought the Mr. Biscuit thing was like I thought that was going to be John.
That's one of the weirdest things I've read in comics in a while. The Mr. Biscuit part. But I did like that overall this version of John was closer to the John I like than the angry, militant, alien John.
That's what kind of like carried me through. I was like, okay, this is the John that I like and has a whole lot of potential and it just gets squandered all the time. So it was like maybe there's some potential there. So I don't know where this is going. This
I just really liked the sequence in the beginning where he goes to save the plane and he sees everybody's terrified. So he puts them all to sleep, sort of. It's like, I don't want you to be worried. So everyone go to sleep. And I thought that was a nice moment. You know, I don't know. I like I wish this character was in the JLA book, too. Like, this is the kind of character, I think John should always be in the Justice League, but I just think this character would add an interesting dynamic to the team.
Yeah, and I read New Frontier recently, and he remains my favorite part of that book.
Oh, yeah.
I really latch on to the John stuff, and especially where he's talking about, like, Superman's so lucky, you know, he looks like one of them, and they embrace him, and if I were to show my true self, they would scream, and you get a little bit of that here. And so it's like,
that was part of the sadness of John that I always liked, I always responded to. Was he was truly the lonely alien. I mean, Superman is, but... like you said, he can always just pretend to be human, whereas John can shapeshift, but it's not him.
Right.
So I always did like that part. Now, I didn't read Prez number one. How was Prez number one?
Prez is really interesting. So this is a return to an older concept.
I remember it.
Yeah, but this feels a lot like a Vertigo book. It's it's Mark Russell and Ben Caldwell, and it's set in a sort of not too distant future, and we open on one of the one of the political parties has realized that all of their potential candidates have like terrible selfies in their past and couldn't possibly be a good candidate. And so they have these terrible candidates on either side, and they're going to be running for president. And this girl who works at a corn dog place and has a father who's sick and dying in the hospital, unless she raises a whole bunch of money, and she's got like a one of those GoFundMe kind of things going, but it's really not bringing in the goods. And anyway, she's doing a tutorial video for the other staff of this corn dog place to make the corn dogs, and her pigtail ends up in the deep fryer, and she fries her own hair. And her friend, and she's like, "You're not going to put this online, are you?" And it ends up going viral, and people write in her as a presidential, you know, as a third party. And so basically this teenage girl is going to end up as a president
of the
United States.
Despite the fact that she's not 35 years old.
Yeah, I guess that's lax at this point. But and basically the last scene of this first issue is like all of the big conglomerates.
They're pissed.
And like CEOs. No. They're excited about this because they can use her. And these other candidates are basically, it's like, it doesn't matter. And like they all, it's really interesting. They're all like guys in suits and around a boardroom table, but they have like avatars for faces, so it's like a big happy face. It kind of reminded me of Private Eye, where they like everyone has these sort of weird masks, and the pharmaceuticals is called Pharmaduke, so he's got like this dog head with a syringe in his mouth like holding it like a bone. And it's really it's got this really wicked, wry sense of humor. It, like, really into the political commentary. They talk about, instead of doing welfare, let's just have drones with tacos that just drop on people. And
first of all, that is an awesome idea, and I would welcome
it's called like taco drones. And then like, and also we'll make them wear like sweatsuits with ads for taco drone on it, so they'll be walking billboards for the welfare state. Basically, it's really twisted, and it feels like a Vertigo book.
What
and
a strange book for DC to produce.
Yeah, and I mean, like, there's no, you know, other, there's no superheroes in here so far. It's,
I mean, I'm into it. I'm actually gonna check it out after the show, but like, wow, this it does harken back a little bit to the stuff they tried with the New 52 launch that failed miserably. I'm not saying this book's gonna fail miserably, but it does feel like that.
No, it's like it's just very esoteric and interesting, and like there's like reality shows where it's like, how much would you be willing to get your family from Mexico into America? And like the kid has to go like swim through alligators, and then at the end they're like, okay, you have to shoot yourself with this gun, but not in the hands or feet. So he shoots himself in the leg in order to bring his family up from. And it's, so it's like the I don't know if you've seen on Netflix, they have that English show. Oh, what's it called? Black something.
Oh, Black Mirror.
Black Mirror. It's like the modern Twilight Zone kind of thing. And it's very political and very like of the day, like modern concerns. And so if you're into that kind of stuff, this is really good.
Cool.
And it was like, this is a DC book? Crazy.
So I looked at the cover of Dr. Fate number one. Dr. Fate, also one of my favorite characters.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if I'm ready for a hoodie-wearing Dr. Fate.
So, I think it looks good when Sonny Liu draws it.
Well, that's the thing. And then I started reading it, and I was like, oh, well, okay. I mean, Yeah. Sonny Liu art is amazing. And mm-hmm. I actually really did end up liking this quite a bit once I finished.
It's a weird team up.
It's a weird team up. Paul Levitz is very much old school DC writer, and Sonny Liu is very much not an old school DC artist. And I thought about it afterwards, and I thought, you know, they're constantly reinventing Dr. Fate. I mean, the version of Dr. Fate from Geoff Johns' JSA is different from the version of Dr. Fate that I read as a kid. Kent Nelson, different than whoever the guy was in the JSA run. And even the Kent Nelson I read in the Bronze Age, different than the one from the Golden Age. So, whatever.
Right.
But they do kind of really alter. I always, you know, my Dr. Fate, this is not hashtag not my fate, is the Lord of Order and Chaos, Dr. Fate. This is very much tied into the Egyptian mythology. And even the character now who becomes Dr. Fate is an American Egyptian kid who in Brooklyn, his mother's American and his father's from Egypt. And I liked that part. I really did like this book. I thought it was really fun.
I thought it was really interesting. It's a weird team up. Like Paul Levitz writing like teens texting doesn't entirely work, but I like the idea of let's take Dr. Fate, who's such a like an imperious kind of character, and but let's give that to a kid. Like, right. So it's the ultimate, like, you know, great power, you know, great responsibility kind of thing. Like this hapless teenager, and what's he going to do with, you know, this crazy power? And that kind of makes the character a little bit more interesting mm-hmm. to me than just being, you know, that guy who's very clearly knows what he's doing with these powers and has been living this life. So it's this kid with a magic talisman, basically, you know. And I do like the hoodie. I think it's an interesting dissonance. You know, you've got this really classical looking helm, and then a modern day hoodie, and the Ankh and everything, and then like running around with the Egyptian cat god. That's a cool concept.
Yeah, I think it's funny because Paul Levitz pulls stuff like that every once in a while. Like it feels like a modern book,
mm-hmm.
and he's not a modern writer. He's an old school writer.
Yeah, when I did get to the page with the texting, I was like, I don't know, and it doesn't feel like I was talking about all the stuff with Prez, like that feels authentic, mm-hmm. And like this is potentially how like it's the, you know, it's a savvy use of like what you would use drones for and advertising and all that stuff, and like this is, you know, slightly behind the times, but like it's
at
charming.
Least, at least he's texting.
Yeah,
at least that's happening. So I'm gonna stick with we missed less. I'm gonna stick with so far all the books we talked about.
Okay.
Well, Perez, I don't know, I haven't read yet, but Black Canary, Justice League, Martian
Black
Manhunter,
Canary, Dr. Fate, Perez. I'm gonna give
Martian Manhunter at least another issue. I want to find out what the hell's going on.
I am kind of curious. So yeah, maybe we'll see.
So the last one we're gonna talk about is Harley Quinn and Power Girl number one, which is a strange number one because it seems to be spinning out of the storyline in the Harley Quinn book in which these two characters teamed up in a outer space adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And this seems to continue that. I don't remember how that ended exactly.
Which in itself was spinning out of what they did with the Power Girl run. Like they had the Zardoz character.
Yes, yes.
Like and coming to Earth. So like it's all connected.
Well, if you're talking about a book like Justice League where they don't worry about continuity at all, it's the Harley Quinn books. They don't give a fuck. They're just
it's Harley Quinn, so that's fair. I'll be honest in that I think I might have hit the Harley Quinn saturation point.
Yeah, I think so too. I didn't really I struggled through this issue, and I liked that team up a lot.
I like Harley Quinn as a character, but I feel like it's a little bit too much too mm-hmm. often these days.
Yep.
Like I think she's more interesting in small doses.
Right.
Like when she would turn up on Batman the Animated Series and would be this agent of chaos, and now it's like following around. It's like it's not just an injection of Looney Tunes. It's like now it's Looney Tunes with superheroes in it, and I kind of want the reverse. I want her to be like this force of nature that comes in every once in a while. It's like the Punisher, you know, like I don't want to read like Punisher all the time. I wouldn't necessarily want a Punisher TV show, but I'm excited that he's going to be a character on Daredevil. Like I think she's a great supporting character that has a lot of depth potentially.
Yeah, I feel
but as her own
I tend to vacillate on that with the regular book. Like, I will really like an arc or an issue, and then I'll get really bored with an arc or an issue and decide, oh, man, maybe I shouldn't read it anymore. And then I'll read the next one, and I really like it. So I do feel the same way you do, where it's such a strange take on the character. And now, especially in the regular book, you've got a whole army of Harleys. So there's a lot of Harley Quinn going on in the world. But this particular issue, for me, the best part of it is that this is the pretty close to the Power Girl that they wrote before.
That I would be happy to have more of.
And so that's the only thing sort of keeping me interested, but I did struggle because I don't necessarily like these characters in a cosmic setting.
Okay, that's fair.
And I don't know, I felt like this issue, particularly the on-the-nose stuff was really on the nose, like the Yoda character and the hippie space people. It just sort of was like very, okay.
It made Spaceballs look subtle, like in parts. I think it's fun and it has its charm, but like it's not necessarily what I want from these characters.
I think that's
from this creative team, I've liked stuff that they've done with these characters, but this particular combination is not necessarily what I'm looking for.
So I don't think I'm going. I don't even know if this is ongoing or not. But
it's a really weird ongoing.
But I'm not going to stick with it if there's any more. So,
okay.
So those are the DC new number ones we talked about. So we are sticking with most of the ones we read. They were pretty good. I had a good time reading them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So real quick, if you're looking for the perfect geek-themed vacation, look no further than Geek Nation Tours. Geek Nation Tours is proud to announce their return to New York City this fall. Attend the New York Comic Con and explore the city that's the home to the Avengers, Daredevil, Spider-Man, and many more iconic comic book-themed locations over this 7-day tour. They're even going to Jay and Silent Bob's Secret Stash comic book store and the fictional address of the Fantastic Four. Geek Nation Tours handle all the travel, hotel, and tickets to the con. All you need to do is have a great time. But comics aren't all they do, Paul. Geek Nation Tours offers some great tour packages like the Journey to Middle-Earth Tour, where you head to New Zealand to the world of Lord of the Rings, the Zombie Apocalypse Training 101, perfect for Halloween or the Walking Dead fan as you travel to Atlanta to see the filming sites, get hands-on survivalist training, and more. And Galaxy Far Away Tour. You may have missed a Star Wars celebration this year, but now's the time to start planning for next year's celebration.
Will you go to space?
Yeah, they send you to space.
Okay, cool.
All these and many more tours can be found at geeknationtours.com. Book your geek tour today. Paul, which of those tours would you take?
I want to go to New Zealand. That would be pretty cool. Journey to Middle Earth Tour.
That is the one. Although the only other thing to keep in mind is that Star Wars celebration is in London next year.
That's also fun. I would go to any of those.
Even Atlanta?
Not well, depends on the time of year.
So those are cool though. I don't
do well with the humidity, but those all sound awesome.
I want to go to New Zealand.
New Zealand would be my absolutely far and away top pick.
So now I have not been reading Archie versus Predator, Paul. This is issue 3.
Oh man, this is fun. Well, I know you enjoy Afterlife with Archie.
I do.
And what's interesting about Afterlife with Archie in comparison to Archie versus Predator is that Afterlife with Archie is like a whole different art style. It's Francesco Francavilla and doing their own thing, and it's very much its own world based on that stuff. Like all the relationships are there, but it's set aside. This looks like an Archie comic book.
Well, this is the grand tradition, like the Archie versus Punisher was also drawn.
Yeah, it looks like a traditional Archie book, so that makes it all the more like kind of subversive and
insane,
perverse in a way, and weird. Yeah, and so like in this issue, you see they start off on the first issue. They were on the island. They went on this tropical cruise and ended up on the island, and that's where the Predator popped up and made his first kills.
So did the issue last 4 pages after he wipes them all out and then it's over?
They're surprisingly spry, and the Predator surprisingly inept in ways. I love some of the variant covers they have for this. Like there's one, I think it was for issue 2, where like the Predator is like literally hiding behind the counter at, you know, Pop's Diner, and they're waiting to order burgers and whatever, and like the Predator looks scared, and it's like, okay, we got to talk about the crazy of this issue. In this issue, you get Jughead gets killed.
Well, okay? He's always, what?
Jughead, and I will not reveal the reasons, but in issue 2, he ends up wearing ladies' clothes and ends up in high heels and is murdered. Now, the Predator does his standard kill where he takes your spine. He takes your head and your spine as his prize,
right.
And he puts it inside a vending machine. So that's where Archie finds his friend.
Oh.
And Jughead's head is there, and he grabs Jughead's felt crown and is like wringing it in his hands and like screaming at the sky, like, "I'm going to kill you!" And like,
was his head still attached to the spinal column?
Yeah, it's like the spine was dangling down from his intact head with the crown on it, and like his tongue hanging at the side of his head.
Paul, that's no good.
It's creepy, but it's kind of adorable. I don't know. So then this is a big issue for Dilton, who's the brain of the group,
yes.
Guy with the big glasses. Mm-hmm. They reveal somewhere in the background that Dilton has a thing for the girls of Riverdale and wishes he were Archie. So in the AV room, which no one has ever been to, all the popular kids, and they don't even know where it is, in the AV room, he has basically an Archie mech.
Oh,
so it's a robot weird. That looks like Archie that he's been building even before this whole incident started. So it's pre-Predator stuff. And he basically becomes like Robo Archie in order to try and stop the Predator.
This is published by Archie Comics, right? Or is it a co-publisher?
It's Dark Horse. It comes out from Dark Horse.
Who's the writer?
Let's see. It's Alex DeCampi and Fernando Ruiz.
Huh.
And it looks like a modern, you know, Archie comic. Like it's the same style that you would see in an Archie Digest, basically.
That's interesting.
It's really out there. There's also like a mention in the background that Betty's grandmother, when they discover Jughead's, you know, spine, she says, "This is just like the time my grandmother ran over the Yorkie with a lawnmower. There's blood everywhere. And like, so she's like repeating this over and over again throughout.
Jeez.
The story, like she's now fixated on this. Like it's really messed up. And it looking like an Archie comic book as we know it makes it all the more kind of messed up.
Is it a 4-6 issue mini? What is it? Do we know?
This is issue 3 of, I guess it's 3 of 4.
Oh, wow.
3 of 4. Also, and my favorite parts are just it never gets old. It started in the first issue. You see the like the heat vision of the Predator.
Yeah.
So like you see Veronica and like she'll be like when she's angry, like she'll be redder than the other characters, and it's funny.
Whew. All right. Miss Marvel 16. Miss Marvel enters the world of Secret Wars and Battle World, and for me the most noteworthy thing about this issue was that she finally meets up with her namesake Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
In the last page. So I'm really looking forward to the next issue to see how they interact, because she's going to fangirl all over Captain Marvel.
She's going to fangirl all over the place. Yeah. And like, it looks like serious. Like, it's a serious, you know, cliffhanger. And then you get like the preview, like the cover for the next issue and like her cover. Just like hanging on her.
It made me laugh so hard, the cover for the next issue.
It's great. Like, just an enthusiastic, you know, exuberant character and not the, you know, like it's the total inverse of, you know, Wolverine like crouching through the sewers and stuff, like just like angry all the time. And so that was cool when she got to meet Wolverine. So that was even though that wasn't Adrian Alfana, that was a really fun little diversion to go off with Wolverine, because it's such an interesting combination of characters. So yeah. And this was, and as a tie-in to, you know, all this crazy stuff, it, you know, felt all right. It felt like an issue of Ms. Marvel, you know,
it's
like
on the edges of the story, you know, the ultimate planet appears above Earth and everybody freaks out, obviously, but you can only see it when you're in Manhattan, apparently.
I guess.
It's probably the haze of pollution over New Jersey. You can't see anything. New Jersey jokes. So, but I did like the idea of the community coming together to not save everyone, but make sure everyone is okay.
Band together, and like everybody ends up in the school gymnasium, and she's like, "Oh my God, my entire life is in this gym."
How do you feel about the brother possibly being inhuman?
I think, I doubt it's what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting thing to explore, though. Like how that character would deal with the possibility even of being, you know, a superhero.
Right.
Is that they are so different.
He's much angrier than she is.
Yeah.
And well, real quick, so the opening is she's had her heart broken by the supervillain and at a hot dog truck. And at first I was like, why are there seats at this hot dog truck?
Yeah.
I've never seen that in my life. Uh-huh. Until I realized they were doing a riff on her being at a bar, and I laughed because it was a funny riff.
Yeah, like, should we call somebody? Like, and
he's cleaning out glasses, and he's got a rag over his shoulder, and she's ordering hot dogs like they're whiskeys. And It was funny. It was enough to make me overlook the silliness of it. Like, I was like, okay, that's a funny gag.
I think it's perfectly appropriate to that character.
It's the tone of the book.
Yeah, that she's the kind of, you know, teenage girl that where, like, it wouldn't be alcohol. It would be three hot dogs.
I'd like three hot dogs. Runaways.
Runaways, number one. I was like, is this going to be Runaways? You know, it's Noelle Stevenson, and it's not like a continuation of Frankie Vaughn's Runaways.
It's a tie-in, right? It's Battle World.
Yeah, it's a Battle Worlds thing. And so, like, they're all at the Doom School, mm-hmm. and that, like, they have a Doom, like, proctor or teacher, whatever, that they hack to get out. And so, like, the Runaways thing is not necessarily in the legacy, although Molly is there. And it's kind of a joke that Molly's there, because, like, why would she be in a high school? She's too young.
Right.
So, like, in her caption, it's like, does she even go here? So, like, she's just there because Battle Worlds is ridiculous. So it's a bunch of kids, and it's, like, Jubilee as a teenager who I don't think has been a teenager.
Who knows?
Like, hasn't, like, I feel like she's been in her 20s more recently, but I guess, like, it's Battle World, so whatever.
Yeah.
So then, like, Jubilee, and then, like, some new characters and some that I didn't entirely recognize. But so it's, like, it's not Nico and Chase and, you know, mm-hmm. like, the core Runaways, you know, but they're running away from this school.
Well,
like, they break out of this military academy. And, like, so they're runaways. And, like, the, what would you call it? Like, the head boy from Harry Potter, basically,
okay.
is Bucky.
As a kid.
As a teenager, yeah. Right. So he would be, like, he's, like, the hall monitor, I guess, basically, is the idea. And
so this book shouldn't be called Runaways so much as Truancy.
It's because, like, I actually, going through it, I was like, this is kind of, like, more like a Young Avengers or something. Like, the Runaways branding, I think, has so much baggage to it because mm-hmm. people love those characters. So it feels a little bit disingenuous for it to be that. But if you take it just as, like, Runaways 2.0, like, it's a new pilot for that concept.
Well, it's
kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's a Battle World thing, so it'll be over in two issues, and then
yeah, whatever. But, like, you know, and, you know, like, the interactions are kind of interesting, and then, like, the cliffhanger is Valeria is the headmistress of the school.
Hmm. Who was the art?
Who was the art?
Who was the art?
Who was the art? I will look that up while you talk about something else.
So, I remember when you were on the show, you didn't really like Astro City. You read it on occasion. Have you been reading these last two issues?
Yes,
in which
because it's a gorilla on drums.
The gorilla plays drums. This was the
Sanford Green. Sanford Green is the artist on Runaways.
Okay.
I apologize.
So this was the conclusion to the Styx arc, in which the gorilla from not Gorilla City comes to Astro City, just wants to be in a band and not be a superhero, but gets pulled into life because he is a militarily trained gorilla.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked about this issue a lot, and I thought this was fantastic as well as the last one, is that he's basically a soldier coming home from war, right? He's got kind of PTSD from what he did.
Yeah.
And he's not so much a superhero as he is a soldier. And I like the idea of him trying to assimilate back into the world, which is even harder because it's not like we just discussed earlier with Martian Manhunter. It's not like he can just take off his uniform and he's a gorilla. Mm-hmm. And so everyone knows he's the gorilla who can fight. And so he's on a team, and he quits the team because he doesn't really want to do it. He just wants to be in a band, tries to be in a band, but the band keeps getting attacked by supervillains because of who he is. And the band doesn't want him anymore because they don't want to die. And he has sort of a great idea to form a superpowered band of all people who have superpowers. Cause you know, they're people too. And some of them like to play music. So
yeah,
I thought it was a great little,
I love this.
Art. Yeah.
This was delightful.
It was delightful.
And I also love that, like, and we had some superheroes standing. I like that, what's it called? The main superhero, Samaritan. The Superman guy. Samaritan, yeah. Shows up, and it's kind of a funny scene because he's like, don't give up. He's like, I don't know exactly what the solution is, but, like, we're going to figure this out. Like, you're a good kid. I like you, Gorilla Kid. Like, and so anyways, and the Samaritan does follow through. He ends up standing on the roof and guarding the auditions so that these metahumans basically can come in and audition to be part of this band. And no one has to worry about, you know, their secret identity or anything like that. And I love that, like, there's these little one-panel, like, concepts for superheroes.
Yeah.
Like, this girl, it's like Becca or something, and she was in an accident apparently, and they put her in a robot body, and she's just a big keyboard. Like,
it's cool.
She's just a robot keyboard, and she's like, because I thought that I wouldn't be able to play music, but now I can be the music, you know. And there's other ones with like even crazier things going on, but I love that. And it was just like, not everybody with superpowers wants to be, you know, a soldier, at least, you know.
So does this make you reassess your opinion on Astro City?
Absolutely, yeah. I think there's like a big collection of like this recent volume of Astro City coming out, and I'm gonna check this out, because the issues that I have read of this, the modern Astro City stuff, has been really good, and I think I'll be going back and reading some of the other stuff.
I think these two issues have been Astro City at its best. This is the kind of thing it does really, really well.
I think the art kind of turned me off a little bit in the beginning, and then, but like, I love what he's doing with this, like just this little anthology thing and telling stories about like an alternative take on what it would be like, because we've seen so many versions of like the Spider-Man kind of character or like the Batman kind of character and different analogs of them and with slight twists. And now he's just saying like, let's pan way over and just look at the people who just want to play music but also have powers. Man, that like the cover of this one with him playing the drums,
looking so
is
happy.
Just like, yeah, and just look at like that's up there for like cover of the year. That's just like, that's what you want out of comics, right?
Absolutely.
So
back to Battle World.
Thor's number one. This is Jason Aaron and Chris Sprouse. And that should be enough. But you think like, okay, cool. It's going to be a bunch of different Thors from all the different realities. So you've got like Ultimate Thor, you've got Beta Ray Bill, you've got Storm in the role of Thor, and various other ones. There's like an Egyptian themed Thor, and like, all right, I'm into that. I like Thor as a concept. A bunch of Thors, even better. Jason Aaron, cool. It's more than that, because I think you would like this. I'm assuming you didn't read it.
No, we're not reading most of the Battleworld stuff in general.
Okay, you'll want to check this out, because this is a take on procedural cop dramas.
Okay.
All the Thor, it's basically like Law and Order Thor.
Okay, you got me.
They're basically all cops, and they have, you know, different roles, and basically
I know my buttons to push, Montgomery.
Yeah, it's like it's Ultimate Thor and Beta Ray Thor, as he's called, are basically investigating some crimes, some murders, and Beta Ray Bill ends up getting killed. And like Loki's he's kind of like Bubbles. He's kind of like an informant.
Is there a Jerry Orbach Thor?
I guess it would be Ultimate Thor. But it's Jason Aaron, you know, going head over heels for like NYPD Blue, Law and Order. It feels like an episode of Law and Order, it's really embracing those tropes,
right?
And like what cops are like when they you know get together,
right?
And in a procedural setting, and
this is
such a weird idea.
It looks good. I'll be reading it.
Investigating the murder of an all thing.
Yeah, we were sticking mostly just to Secret Wars and reading a couple of the tie-in books, but this one sounds good. So thank you, Paul, for bringing it to my
sure. No, I just
the attention of listeners everywhere.
I was like, Connor would like this.
So those are the books we're going to talk about this week. Real quickly, if you go to ifanboy.com/support, that's the handy page that includes all of your ways to help iFanboy, including the Amazon link, in which you go to amazon.com, make your purchases as you would normally. We get a little piece of that action. Nothing comes out of your pocket. You can also become an iFanboy member there for $3 a month or $30 a year. That's how you can help the show directly. And also, that's where you can make your donation of any amount, including doubloons. I think PayPal takes doubloons.
Drachma.
Right. So that's the page, ifanboy.com/support, where all you can help to keep the show going. We really appreciate everyone who does that. And we have gone a little long, so we have time for one email.
Okay.
And that email is from Nick from San Francisco, California, as of 8 months ago, previously Brooklyn. He says, I've never written iFanboy, but I'm making a plea for you to discuss Low Number 7. I'm a 33-year-old doctor, and to relieve some stress, I started picking up comics for the first time in 20 years. I enjoyed some Marvel books, all new X-Men, Moon Knight, etc. But after suffering through Original Sin, I realized if I was ever going to reinvest in comics, I wanted to have at least a few series that could leave me a little more emotionally invested and a little more in wonder at the craftsmanship of the story and the art on the page. I found Low to be one of those series. The artwork ranges from abstract landscapes to personal characters, all with a very vibrant palette. The characters are interesting, the plot pacing is great, and with a constant move-forward movement. I don't think you've mentioned it since number one was Pick of the Week, but maybe the closer to 6 weeks shipping schedule isn't helping it, or maybe you just don't like it. Paul, that was your pick of the week.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, back in the day. I still like Low, but I honestly, I think it's the shipping. I've switched over to collections for it.
I have done the same. I like it. It's just I found myself in that situation going, who, what, who, where are we?
Yeah.
And then I just like, oh, that's my sign to move on to collections.
Because there's so many, you know, and so many stories that, you know, you're following, and even Remender stories that you're following, that you're like, okay, this would be more satisfying and affecting if it just hit me all at once. Yes. So over to collections, because it is something that I want to like return to, because I think it does have that depth that it rewards, you know, coming back to. It just feels like one of those books. And part of the reason I made number one was the pick was because of that promise of this is a story by a person who has been traditionally very cynical about hope.
Right.
And it ends on such a bleak note. But I wanted to see where that goes, and the world building in it is so cool. I think there are I think Greg Ticini, like, I think there are fans and then detractors, and but I'm definitely on the fan side. I think that just the art is so evocative and dreamlike, and to do something underwater and like alien and otherworldly, it's just really special.
Yeah, I think the art is magical. Well, it's pretty magical. I mean, it's an alien world. It takes place, a lot of it, underwater, and it doesn't look like any other book out there. It's got a really great color palette, and the characters are interesting. You know, Remender's on a great run. We've talked about it with all his books, The Deadly Class and Black Science, etc. And he's doing really great work. This is just one of those books that I wasn't enjoying as much issue to issue. I waver on that with Black Science sometimes, just because there's a lot going on in it. And
it's that thing. It's like when you read something and you know that like this should be really affecting right now. This should really be getting to me, but I got disengaged.
You don't want to shortchange the book yourself, the creators, anyone, by not really feeling the full impact of the story when you've forgotten nuances of the relationship of the characters or why that thing that just happened is important. That happens, and I'd rather just read it all at once and get that.
Sometimes it's okay for like to get into a comic, like read number 7 or 8 or 9 of something and just gradually remember, oh yeah, right, that's where we were last time. But when it's Low and you remember where you were last time, like within the last 2-3 pages of the issue, and you've lost that momentum, you feel like you're shortchanging it and yourself. So I'd rather just have that, you know, that,
which is okay.
That
it's just totally chapter. It's totally okay to read things collected. I prefer to read everything collected if I had the opportunity. But
yeah, I've been doing a lot more of that lately, just because I'm not charged with talking about individual issues on a week to week basis anymore.
Right.
And so I've been reading a lot of things in collections, and I was like, wow, this like there's so much more gravity to, you know, to the story sometimes when you're not reading it like in the middle of, you know, 14 other books that have their own priorities, you know, like when you can just like immerse yourself in the world of Low for a little bit, or, you know, or Black Science or whatever it is.
Especially when it's not a world. Superheroes tend to be different because they're so culturally ingrained, who they are, where they are, why they're doing what they're doing, and their relationships, that you can get by and not remembering everything because, you know, as osmosis, you know everything. Whereas Low, you know, it's all in the world, so you don't know anything about these characters, and it's just harder to remember for me.
And something like Astro City, that's cool to read. Like, I like reading that, you know, once a month. Mm-hmm. That's fine. Like, just to go back into that world. And I think those are designed, this particular volume of Astro City is designed really well to just come in and you got your own little, like, Twilight Zone episode.
Right.
Let's peek into this person's life, you know. But with something like that, something like Low, a lot of those Image books, I'd like to just get lost in, you know, a hardcover. I like that they've been putting out those deluxe hardcovers of things like Lazarus.
Lazarus is tough because I do want to keep talking about it, and I do really enjoy it. It came out this week, and it was another good issue. But I do also find myself sometimes on the edge because there's so many characters and stories and families and who's with who, and you start to lose that thread a little bit. But thanks, Nick, from writing in. He wrote us at contact@ifanboy.com. You can also call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOYS. 3262697. That's where you can tell us who you are and where you're from, and keep it around 30 seconds. And Paul, plug your various endeavors.
Sure. Let's see. We just recorded an episode of O Comics last night. That's the podcast for panels.net. We read a lot of great commentary on comics. Cool thing about panels of so many different writers, and we keep expanding our roster of writers from, you know, all walks of life and different, you know, opinions and everything, and coverage of, you know, stuff that I've never heard of and stuff that I am very much familiar with but never looked at it in that certain way. So that's the fun of panels. And then O Comics, I just did an episode with our buddy David Acampo talking about issues of parenthood in comics, thinking about Father's Day. And we also talked about that recent news story about the college in California where the student complained about there being nudity and basically she said the comics that were on her comic book reading list for this class were pornography. And she was expecting just Batman and Robin. And so we talked about that a little bit and, you know, what the you know, mainstream perception of what comics is and what you can do in comics and stuff like that. So that was a fun one. So that'll be out around the same time as this episode is out. So check those out at panels.net and then O Comics on iTunes.
And you can head over to ifanboy.com to comment on this show, talk about this week's books, find all of our other podcasts. They will be an Ant-Man show in a couple of weeks, I guess, when that comes out. You can find that there. Follow us at facebook.com/ifanboy and at ifanboy on Twitter. You can follow us individually. I'm at CS Kilpatrick. Paul is at Fuzzy Typewriter. Josh is at J.A. Flanagan. That's where you can find us.
Cool. And if you dig the show, you can write a review in iTunes, or better yet, tell your friends about iFanboy. Introduce your mom to podcasts. Help spread that iFanboy love all around.
So thanks for listening. Thank you, Paul, for coming on in the wake of Josh. He claims he goes to Vermont to ride his bike, but I think he's running heroin.
Okay.
I don't know for sure. That's my suspect. That's
a kingpin.
No, he's not a kingpin. He's a lowly runner.
He's a runner? Okay. Yeah.
So that's what I suspect. So thanks for stepping in while he was gone.
My pleasure. And
if
my
he ends up in federal penitentiary, then we'll have to figure out how where to go from there. But in the meantime, I'm Connor.
It'll be like cereal. Receiving a collect call from...
We could turn iFanboy into a serial podcast about Josh's upcoming federal charges on drug running.
And I am Paul.
See you next week. Scattered pictures of the smiles we left behind. Smiles we gave to one another for the way we were. Can it be it was all so simple then?
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.